From time to time in our studies in the scriptures, we come upon passages that relate to one another and seem to present a different set of facts that contradict one another. And when we come to the 12th chapter of the book of Genesis, we encounter just such a passage. Of course, it follows on from what immediately precedes it. A section that begins with verse 27 of chapter 11. A call for our attention to be fixed on a change, a new focus in the unveiling of God's revelation is seen by the statement, "These are the generations of Terah." We're told that Terah fathered Abraham, Nahor, and Haran. And Haran fathered Lot. Haran died in the presence of his father Terah in the land of his kindred in Ur of the Chaldeans. And Abraham and Nahor took wives. The name of Abraham's wife was Sarai, and the name of Nahor's wife Milcah, the daughter of Haran, the father of Milcah and Iscah. Now Sarai was barren. She had no child. Terah took Abraham his son, and Lot the son of Haran, his grandson, and Sarai his daughter-in-law, his son Abraham's wife, and they went forth together from Ur of the Chaldeans to go into the land of Canaan. But when they came to Haran, they settled there. The days of Terah were 205 years, and Terah died in Haran. Now the Lord said to Abraham, "Go from your country and your kindred and your father's house to the land that I will show you, and I will make of you a great nation. And I will bless you and make your name great so that you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and him who dishonors you I will curse. And in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed." So Abraham went, as the Lord had told him, and Lot went with him. Abraham was 75 years old when he departed from Haran. And Abraham took Sarai his wife, and Lot his brother's son, and all the possessions they had gathered, and the people that they had acquired in Haran. And they set out to go to the land of Canaan. Well, so far, so good. But when we compare that with a passage like Acts chapter 7, in which we have the account of Stephen's martyrdom, Stephen preaches and proclaims something of the background and history to the coming of Jesus and then the gospel. And he begins in this vein in verse 2 of Acts chapter 7. "Brothers and fathers, hear me. The God of glory appeared to our father Abraham when he was in Mesopotamia, before he lived in Haran, and said to him, 'Go out from your land and from your kindred and go into the land that I will show you.' Then he went out from the land of the Chaldeans and lived in Haran. And after his father died, God removed him from there into this land in which you are now living." There's a problem. These two accounts of Abraham's call by God do not exactly fit one another. There are questions that inevitably arise out of these differences. Where was Abraham when he was called? Stephen asserts that Abraham was in Ur of the Chaldeans. The plain reading of the text in Genesis, however, would suggest that Abraham was called when he was in Haran. Another question: did Abraham leave Haran before or after Terah's death. Stephen states that it was after the death of Terah. The problem, though, is that Abraham was born when Terah was 70 years old, and Abraham left Haran when he was 75 years old. Which means that Abraham left Haran when Terah was 145 years old, but we're told in verse 32 of chapter 11 that Terah was 205 years old when he died in Haran, which leaves a discrepancy of 60 years, if the maths is correct. Another question. Did Abraham know where he was going? The suggestion by chapter 12 and verse 1, and also in Stephen's account, is that he didn't. Go from your country and your kindred and your father's house to the land I will show you. He's on a blind march somewhere, according to that text. But in chapter 11 we're told that Terah took Abraham his son and Lot the son of Haran his grandson and Sarai his daughter-in-law, his son Abraham's wife, and they went forth together from Ur of the Chaldeans to go into the land of Canaan. But when they came to Haran, they settled there. It would seem that they had a definite agenda to travel to Canaan. And that, of course, leads us to another question. Who was actually in charge here? Abraham or Terah? Well, so many questions. Are there any answers? Possibly, and possibly not. Where was Abraham when he was called? Well, he may have been called in Ur of the Chaldeans, and again in Haran. It may be that he received an initial call in Ur of the Chaldeans, that God appeared to him there, as Stephen does state, but that the call was given a second time, perhaps with greater emphasis, in Haran. Certainly, the Hebrew text signifies that the command that is given to Abraham in chapter 12 and verse 1 is very emphatic. Go! But if the initial command was given in Ur of the Chaldeans, how do we account for the fact that there they seem to have a particular destination in mind, whereas in chapter 12 it seems as though Abraham is leaving Haran without any definite goal? Well, one explanation would be that, given that it is Moses who is writing this for the children of Israel, that he knows the ultimate destination, even though Abraham at this particular time does not. So Terah and his son and his grandson all head away from Ur of the Chaldeans, and they're on their way to the land of Canaan. Now, they may not know that, but Moses knows that, and the children of Israel, as they read this, know that. But it is something that has not yet been disclosed to Abraham. Did Abraham leave Haran before or after Terah's death? Well, the most likely explanation here is that Stephen was using a text that had the death of Terah at 145 years of age rather than 205 years of age. It's unlikely that Stephen was using a manuscript known today as the Samaritan Pentateuch, but it is quite possible that he was using texts that had similarities with it. In the Samaritan Pentateuch, Tira is stated as dying at 145 years of age, which would explain Stephen saying that Abraham left Haran after Tira's death, when in reality Tira still lived another 60 years. The restatement of a command to Abraham to leave Haran would have extra weight if Tira was still alive and was left behind. Well, so much for the questions. We cannot be absolutely certain as to the various answers that could be given. And in a sense, it doesn't matter. They're not crucial to the story. They don't make a huge difference. I raise them because undoubtedly at some point or another you're going to stumble across them. It's one of those passages that people raise with, oh, you know, the Bible's full of contradictions. When it comes down to it, there's probably only a handful of passages that they could point to, but this would be one of them. How can we think that the Bible is accurate when you have these contradictions in them? Well, there are some ways that we can understand quite reasonably the differences that arise. Now, what's the point of this story? Well, the point is to make us aware that God has a particular goal and purpose for Abraham. That God is sovereignly working out his purposes in the history of humanity, and in doing so, he has a particular purpose for Abraham himself. We already observed in our last study in the book of Genesis that verses 27 through 32 set us up for the beginnings of Israel as a nation. They provide us with the foundational heritage of the children of Israel that would come later on in this book. And we see that this particular family, the family of Terah, is descended from Shem, who himself has been marked out by God as a recipient of the promise that was given in the Garden of Eden. This is the line of the seed of the woman. This is God's sovereign choice for bringing the Messiah into the world, the one who would one day deliver his people. And this then is found in the story of Abraham in far clearer ways than we've seen it even up to this point. To some degree, we can only see the line, we can only trace the line because of what we know later in the scriptures. But when we come to the person of Abraham, explicit promises are made to him. Now, God specifically calls Abraham, whether it's while he's still in Ur of the Chaldeans, or whether it is while he is in Haran, or whether it is both, the call still stands. Abraham said, the Lord said to Abraham, go from your country, go from your kindred, go from your father's house to the land I will show you. This command that is given to Abraham is an enormous thing. That the decision that Abraham has to make is not insignificant at all. Remember, this is before the days of cell phones. This is the days before Skype and the internet. This is the days before airline travel. When God calls Abraham to go from his country, it will be forever. He'll be leaving everything with which he has been familiar. Unless we think that this was no big deal for Abraham, archaeology has demonstrated that Ur of the Chaldeans was a fairly advanced and civilized society at that time. It was also a very religious society. And Abraham had grown up in that society and no doubt was used to the comforts that Ur provided its citizens. And he's called to go, to leave that. He's called furthermore to leave his kindred, to leave his relatives. And more specifically, he is called to leave his father's house. Now, if this call is given specifically within Ur of the Chaldeans, then the call is given without Abraham knowing whether or not Terah is going to accompany him, whether any of his family do. If the call was given in Ur of the Chaldeans, then we note that Terah did accompany him, as did Lot, his nephew, and that together they made the journey from Ur of the Chaldeans and settled in Haran. If the call was given to Abraham in Ur of the Chaldeans, we can answer the fact that Terah is described as taking Abraham and Nahor and Lot. With him is the fact that he is the head of the house. If he has decided that he will accompany his son who has been called in this way, then it is he who is going. On the other hand, if they have settled in Haran and it is at that point that God calls Abraham to go, we see the significance of the fact that God is calling Abraham to leave Terah. Here he is, he's settled now in a new place in Haran, not significantly different from the city that he's left, still with all the pleasures, a rich merchant city on one of the main arterial trade routes. No doubt they were doing well there. And Abraham is called to leave his father's house. That would not have been an easy choice to make. But God accompanies the call, the command, with a promise. Well, actually, it's a compound series of promises. I will make of you a great nation. Now, we've already encountered the fact that Sarai, his wife, is barren. And of course, this is going to be a point of tension in the story as it unfolds. But here, right at the beginning, when God first encounters Abraham, when God first commands Abraham, he says to him, I will make of you a great nation. He also says, I will bless you and make your name great. Here too is a point of significance. Do you remember what the problem was that caused the dispersion of humanity from the area of Babel? It was the fact that the people wanted to make a name for themselves. Come, let us build ourselves a city and a tower with its top into the heavens, and let us make a name for ourselves, lest we be dispersed over the face of the whole earth. It is the name of God that is to be glorified. and the people of the earth were commanded to disperse through the earth, to fill it and populate it. But these people were determined to disobey God and to glorify themselves. God says to Abraham, go. Go from your country, your kindred, your father's house. I will make you a great nation, and I will bless you and make your name great. It is God's prerogative to do such a thing, not man's. And God promises this to Abraham. I will bless those who bless you. Abraham will meet all kinds of people. He's going to head out from a settled lifestyle of comfort. And he's going on a journey. He doesn't know how long it's going to be. He doesn't know where it's going to take him. He doesn't know what kind of people he's going to meet along the way. But he has this assurance. I will bless those who bless you. And a counterpart to that, him who dishonors you, I will curse. So whoever you meet along the way, God is saying, you know I am with you. Blessing will come to those who bless you, and a curse will be upon those who dishonor you. Now in the midst of this, there are a couple of other assertions or even commands that are given. At the end of verse 2, we read, you will be a blessing. That is one possible way of translating the text. Though it can be argued that a more accurate rendering of the text is to put this in the imperative, be a blessing. In other words, what God is saying to Abraham, if we can shorten the statement, is go and be a blessing. Go and be a blessing. You know what happens over and over and over again when people refuse the command of God? They become a curse. Not only to themselves, but often to others also. And what God is saying to Abraham is, go and be a blessing. And we see at the end of verse 3 that through Abraham, the blessing will be to all the families of the earth. It's going to be a worldwide significance, Abraham's obedience to God. It's not going to just touch him and his immediate family, but it will touch the whole world. There is the call of God upon this man. And let us remember that this man was no different from any of the other men. That this man was an idolater. He was a worshipper of a false god. The Chaldeans, or at least the people of Ur in this time, it was only later after the time of Abraham that it would be called Ur of the Chaldeans, that this name set it in a context that the people of Israel would understand. But the people of this area at that time worshipped many gods, but chief of them was a moon god, a deity to whom sacrifices were given, including the live sacrifices of people. And Abraham had participated in this worship. He was part of that society. But God called him out of that. God called him out of the worship of false gods to worship and obey the one true God, his creator. And we're told that Abraham's response was to go. So Abraham went, as the Lord had told him. And Lot went with him. Abraham was 75 years old when he departed from Haran. He went. He took his wife. He took Lot, his brother's son. He took all their possessions. He took the people that they had acquired in Haran. Now, we think of that in terms probably of slaves that he had acquired, or perhaps servants that he had acquired. Perhaps during his time settled in Haran, as it's described at the end of verse 31, he had been successful in business on that trade route, and that his business had expanded and he had acquired slaves or servants, and these he took with him. But one commentator suggests that what is actually implied in the Hebrew terms that are used here is not that of slaves or even servants, but people who have become one with him. The idea being that Abraham has been vocal about what he's going to do. That he's told people that he has been called by God to go on a journey, and that God would bless him if he obeyed. And that people have heard this and they've decided, well, we'll go with Abraham. And we'll be part of this blessing. We'll bless Abraham and God will bless us. And so he's gathered people around him in Haran who go along with him. And I guess we can see Lot as being one of those. Lot, who, yes, we see in the later story has problems, but is nevertheless in the New Testament described as righteous and a man deeply grieved by the sinfulness around him. Here they are then. They leave Haran and they head on this journey to an unknown destination. Of course, we know where they go. They set out to go to the land of Canaan, Moses tells us. All along the way, they are following God's lead. They are trusting God, being guided by God, obeying God step by step by step. There is, you see, in Abraham a decided obedience to the command. He has decided, yes, he will leave his country with all that it offered to him. Safety, culture, worship, all of that he would leave. He would leave his kindred. He would leave his father's house. He would leave his father there in Haran. And he would go on this journey in obedience to God. He was decided. We also see that quite apart from the, what I guess we would have to say is speculation with regard to the people that he acquired in Haran, once he's arrived in Canaan, Abraham is most definitely very public about his allegiance to God. I think it's yet another hint that he probably was in Haran itself, and that it is not just speculation, but that we have reasonable evidence that the acquisition of these people is in terms of their allegiance to him and to his God. When he comes to Canaan, we're told that he passed through the land to the place of Shechem, to the oak of Moreh. Now Shechem was located pretty much centrally in the land of Canaan. And the oak of Moreh was a meeting place for the Canaanites, and possibly a place of worship, but most definitely a place in which people were taught. And of course, to the Canaanites, that would mean being taught false religion. Abram passed through the land to the place of Shechem, to the oak of Moreh. At that time, the Canaanites were in the land, so this tribe of people that we've already encountered as being accursed people, they were already in the land. The children of Israel who are reading this, for whom Moses has written this, perceive the Canaanites to be a people of great wickedness, that on account of their wickedness were to be driven out of the land by the Israelites. They are in the land in the days of Abraham. And the Lord appeared to Abraham there at Shechem, near the oak of Moreh, and said to Abraham, "To your offspring I will give this land." This land full of these Canaanites who are worshipping their false gods. "I will give this land to you." And look what Abraham does. So he built there an altar to the Lord who had appeared to him. He was public in his allegiance to God, a God who had cursed the Canaanites, a God who had promised to give him their land. And in the midst of the Canaanites, Abraham worships God. You see, he takes God at his word. God says to him, "Go, I will lead you to a land." He goes, and he's led. God says to him, "I will bless those who bless you." Abraham preaches this, and people are added to him. "And I will curse those who dishonor you." And so Abraham makes no hesitation about standing up in the midst of a pagan people to whom God has promised to give their lands to him, and he worships that God. Because he has nothing to fear. They dishonor him, God will curse them. They attempt anything against him, God will visit them with judgment. Abraham takes God at his word. Furthermore, he continues to move through this land. From there, we're told, verse 8, he moved to the hill country on the east of Bethel and pitched his tent with Bethel on the west and Ai on the east. Of course, these names were given later on. We'll read later in Genesis the origin of the name Bethel, but these are the places that Israel know them as. Bethel was on his west, Ai was on his east, and there he built an altar to the Lord and called upon the name of the Lord. Abraham is public in his allegiance to his God. And Abraham journeyed on, still going toward the Negev. This journey of Abraham takes him from one end of the land of Canaan to the other. It takes him right the way through this land which God has promised to give him. It's symbolic, in a sense, of the reality that this land would become the possession of Abraham's descendants. He himself would not realize the fulfillment of these promises. Abraham trusted God. And the book of Hebrews in chapter 11 makes mention of the fact that Abraham and others like him trusted God even though they never actually saw the final fulfillment of the promises that God made to them. They were decided in their obedience to God, and they were a public in their allegiance to God. Now we will learn much more about Abraham and the significance of his call in the weeks to come. But those of you who are familiar with the scriptures will see in the call of Abraham a parallel in God's call to us. There is a command and there is a promise. If we turn to the New Testament and to Matthew's Gospel and the 10th chapter, we have an expression of this same command. In verse 32, we read, "Everyone who acknowledges me before men, I also will acknowledge before my Father who is in heaven. Whoever denies me before men, I will also will deny before my Father who is in heaven." We move on to verse 37. "Whoever loves father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. Whoever loves son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. And whoever does not take his cross and follow me is not worthy of me. Whoever finds his life will lose it, and whoever loses his life for my sake will find it." You see, this is what Abraham did. He left father and mother. He left his life, all that he knew, all that he was familiar with. He left to be obedient to God with no definite idea of where he was going or what he would meet along the way. But he obeyed God. He honoured God before men. And God honoured him. There is a command that we are to take up our cross, whatever the cross may be for us, and follow Christ, just as Abraham took up his cross and left everything that he was familiar with in order to follow God. Now turn over to Mark's Gospel in chapter 10. And in verses 29 and 30 we read Jesus saying, "Truly I say to you, there is no one who has left house or brothers or sisters or mother or father or children or lands for my sake and for the gospel who will not receive 100-fold now in this time houses and brothers and sisters and mothers and children and lands with persecutions, and in the age to come, eternal life." There's the promise. "I will bless you." And that's the call for every one of us this morning. Will we follow the God of Abraham? The God who calls us from our comforts in this world to take up a cross and persecution, to honour him before men, with the promise that he will honour us and bless us with a name and with a land, with life eternal. It's a call that every one of us has to think about and act upon. Abraham believed God, and God blessed him. Will you believe the promises of God and receive a blessing from God? Or will you be like Tira, content in Hara. I'm not a part of the blessing.